April 2010 episode of Blue Shift, the podcast from NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. I'm Maggie Massetti. So how many of us have wanted to be astronauts since we were kids? I know I did, and I know I'm not the only one. Right now, manned spaceflight's future may be somewhat uncertain, but it appears that there might be new opportunities opening up for those wishing to experience a trip to space. One of these is the idea of doing science aboard suborbital flights. Joe Hill, a scientist here at the ASD, shares the dream of becoming an astronaut. Recently, she was given the chance to participate in something called Suborbital Scientist Astronaut Training. The idea is that commercial suborbital spaceflight may be a viable option for the scientists wishing to test their projects and do their experiments in space. Much of what Joe does here at NASA could lend itself to the sort of testing environment, and what she does is build X-ray and gamma ray instruments.
My main effort is towards building the instruments. I'm an instrument builder, so we build X-ray instruments for different applications, one of which is GEMS, to look at black holes. We're building a gamma ray detector to look at or terrestrial gamma rays that goes off with the lightning, and then gamma ray bursts as well. So we design the instrument and build the instrument and help the engineers with what the science requirements are.
How well do the instruments she builds mesh with the idea of testing them in suborbital space? And has NASA ever tested things suborbitally before?
Up until recently, the suborbital science program has been involved with suborbital balloons and suborbital rockets, sounding rockets, that go up and basically have 5 minutes of time in space. With the new commercial push to doing these sort of space planes, they're getting very close to carrying passengers on the space planes, and so now they're looking at what research could be done. If a scientist could fly on one of these space planes and get into space into the suborbital region of space for 5 minutes, what kind of experiments could they do? And NASA's looking to see what experiments could be done, how interesting it would be for science, and if it's a new way of making different measurements also in the atmosphere.
Because this training was not sponsored by NASA, rather it was an outside commercial company, we wondered if there were any problems with her participation in it.
So I'm a contractor at NASA. I work for University Space Research Association. They're very interested in these suborbital vehicles and how they could be used for science. And so actually USRA, in collaboration with Southwest Research Institute, put together a program with NASDAR, which is the training center, to train up some scientists in what it would be like to travel on one of these space planes and for us to get a feel for what kind of experiments we would be able to do. So yes, I had to take time away from my NASA program, but I was funded through my institute. The president of our company actually knows that I want to be an astronaut, and so he was keen to help me with that. And also we have a concept study for putting a gamma ray detector on one of these suborbital vehicles. That's funded through NASA. So with that in place, it made sense for me to be able to go. But I still feel very lucky that I had the opportunity.
Joe told us what her training was like and how realistic it was to a real suborbital flight.
It was absolutely amazing. I mean, I've never been to space. It's one of my dreams. But as far as I could tell, going on the centrifuge and the way that they did the simulation, it was as close to going into space you could do without actually doing it. You didn't get the weight, apart from the weightless part at the top. The takeoff and the coming in towards landing was just so realistic. In the morning, they did two training sessions. One was for GX, which is basically the force of gravity on your chest. And then following that, they did GZ, which is the gravity pushing down on your head, which is very difficult to cope with because it's pushing all your blood down to your feet. And so you start to pass out. In fact, you lose some vision. And to counteract that, you have to constrict your blood vessels to pump your blood up into your brain so you stay awake. So we got through those tests in the morning, and then in the afternoon we get to do the flight profile, and they have all the visuals on the screen. You're in this little cabin and you have the visuals showing the taking off from Earth and seeing the sky, and it's just very, very realistic, all the sound and everything. It's great.
What comes next, especially when even the prospect of commercial spaceflight seems far off?
Following from the training, there was a conference in Boulder just recently, and the NASA headquarters guys showed up and they said that they're going to put $15 million per year for 5 years to fund these opportunities. And so what we're hoping is with our concept study we're going to be looking at, as I said, it's called Firefly on Demand, and so it's going to be looking at the gamma rays coming from terrestrial lightning. I'm hoping from the concept study we can come up with something that NASA will think is viable and maybe use some of this $15 million to fly something. One of the things that's clear is although industry is making great strides in terms of getting people up there, they're just not quite there yet. So within a year, I believe, they're going to start making unmanned flights. Obviously, the pilot will be on board, but not taking scientists. And NASA, I think, once they get a good feel for how safe it will be, will start funding scientists to go up there and do real science.
Does pursuing suborbital flight mean giving up on the dream of becoming a NASA astronaut?
I'm a foreign national at the moment, so I can't apply to NASA. Hopefully in the next couple of years when I get citizenship, I'll be able to apply to NASA. ESA also is a good opportunity to apply there. I mean, any opportunity that would come up, I would definitely want to apply. But the idea of taking up your own experiment is really, you know, would be the cake and eat it kind of thing. The other thing is the commercial vehicles compared to going, the people that paid to go up and onto the space station paid, I think it was $15 million on a space plane is $200,000, which I can't afford myself, but maybe, you know, NASA would fund us to go do an experiment for $200,000. It's a lot less than $15 million.
We actually learned about Jo's suborbital astronaut training when we ran across a blog entry she wrote for Nature. We soon learned she had a Twitter account and had tweeted about it as well. As devotees of social media ourselves, we're interested in how these things were incorporated into her experience.
Up until this opportunity, I'd never tweeted or blogged, actually, that we were encouraged to do some public outreach to try and gain some enthusiasm, both within the scientific community and also with the public. Education and outreach on these suborbital vehicles is a big part. So not only is there science, but also outreach to students that could be building their own experiments. So they were encouraging us to get out there and sort of to make links with the public so the next generation of scientists or engineers will be able to be involved. And so I actually, you know, I set up my Twitter account. But it was a really nice way to be able to, as you were going, be able to tell people what you were feeling and how things were going. People seemed to be really interested in this new way of doing science. And so it was one of the lucky ones that got the chance to do the training. I thought it was important to explain to people what it was like.
But will she keep on tweeting?
Since then, I found other things that I thought that I could tweet that would actually be interesting to people. Up till then, I was like, well, what do I do that anybody cares about that I would tweet about? But having had that experience and feeling that there were several things going on in that particular day that was, you just needed one or two lines to explain what was going on. And so people could keep up, you know, feel like they were taking part with you. Other opportunities have also occurred to me in the meantime. And so I've been able to tweet about those as well. And the same with blogging. It's really made me look at what I do in a different perspective and say, okay, well, this would be interesting. Like the conference, for instance, this would be interesting to people who aren't at the conference and they can read up and see what was going on.
We hope that Jo does keep finding ways to reach out because her sharing her experience may inspire someone else. Meanwhile, Jo's childhood dream remains.
That's how I've ended up at NASA, actually. Is all I've ever wanted to do since I watched Star Wars when I was like five was be an astronaut. It's been a windy path, but eventually, you know, building instruments and things. This actually, I applied to be an astronaut at ESA a couple of years ago, and I made it through the first round, but I didn't make it too far. I was really disappointed. So these new space vehicles where you can take your experiment into space and do an experiment, it would be phenomenal. It's not just going into space and doing somebody else's experiment. You can take your own science and go make the measurements yourself, which would be superb.
We hope all this will become a reality for her. It's brought her a long way already, only 50 vertical miles or so to go. If you want to follow Jo Hill on Twitter, she's @SpacePurple. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we're @NASABlueShift. Check out our website for links to Jo's blog and more about the program she went through. We'll see you soon with another new podcast. This is Maggie Massetti, bringing the universe closer to you with Blue Shift.